Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, today is chapter 51, verse 12. It's actually the Haftorah for Parshas Shoftim. It starts here.
Really?
Yeah. This is one of the Haftorahs of comfort, which is, again, it talks about the future being better. It talks about, it speaks to us, because life that we know of is full of difficulties. There was a time in Israel where it talks about each person sitting under his olive tree and, you know, just enjoying the nice weather and the fruits coming down. And the, the life of the exile has its challenges. And it's different forms of the challenges. This speaks to us because it speaks to the challenges. One, anti-Semitism being the main challenge throughout our history, where Jews have been in danger and Jews have faced difficulties. But there are other challenges we have. One of those is being far away from people we love, like, you know, the Jewish people all spread apart, and it's such a shame. Like, there's so many, you know, just people that, you know, even our you know, rabbis and friends and relatives, and we're just all spread around. We can't, in the land of Israel, it's a small country. We get to see each other, you know, we're close by. But there are many other difficulties that we face since the exile. The interesting thing is, at the same time where it talks about the future, there's a little bit of rebuke thrown in there, which... there is a concept that we were put into exile to fix certain things. And the Mashiach can come either because we've reached a certain amount of time and the time is up and we've accomplished whatever we need to accomplish, or if we return to Hashem and we fix the certain problems, then we can have that existence where it's no longer necessary to have to be involved in the pressure cooker known as the exile. So over here, it speaks to the comfort that the challenges that we faced in the exile, the losses that we faced. Jews have been killed, the Holocaust and pogroms, and Jews have disappeared, we've been kicked out of our land, and we face great difficulties. So how will we be comforted? Who can comfort us? So we begin on verse 12. It says, "Anochi, Anochi, hu menachmechem." This is such an important thing that Hashem has many messengers. He's the King of Kings. He doesn't need to do things himself. He can send an angel. He can send other things to comfort us. But He says, "I myself will comfort you." That's a guarantee. That's a promise. And it's interesting. He uses the word "Anochi." Anochi is the same as the word of the Ten Commandments that Hashem came to us. He said, "Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God." So it's implying that Hashem will, the Hashem that gave us the Torah, He's the one that will come to comfort us. Anochi, Anochi, Umenachem. I myself will come and comfort you. There is, we always find this double expression. It's Shabbos Nachamu, that's the Shabbos after Tisha B'Av. It says, Nachamu, Nachamu, be comforted, be comforted. Double is that we felt like we were doubly punished. Whenever Hebrew, they double something, it also means to emphasize. So like when it says, Anochi, Anochi, it means that everybody will know and everybody will see. We live in a world where we see our values are trampled on, where we see behavior that's out there that really doesn't... we don't understand why doesn't Hashem come to the world and tell them it's not right, this kind of behavior, the people that do terrible things. So Hashem says, I myself, everybody will recognize me. Hashem's, we actually say that in the at the end of Aleinu, V'haya Hashem l'melech ha-kol ha-oretz. Hashem will be the king over all the earth. And there'll be a time when the world will recognize Hashem. There's just a lot of darkness out there. You ever turn on a lot of crazy people, a lot of just people. You know, it seems like lately in our society we've had a lot of these mass shootings, and it's like it seems to be increasing, and you have to say that there's something going on. Either people like the attention or the violence or the video games, or there's something that would, how do you make a mass murder where somebody wants to go out and really just shoot strangers? And just, I mean, it's just so, and the people who do it are almost callous about it. Like, it could be that personally these people were very nice in their own lives, and they just never, you know, somehow it looked like a fun thing to do, to go out and destroy a dozen lives, you know, and it's just become commonplace in our society. But we have to just see that it's produced by, if people can play video games where they shoot people out, and they watch movies where people are, where they become so into themselves that they don't care about what happens to other people that are caught up in their violence.
They usually kill themselves.
Yes, that's true. But we want a world where Hashem's values will be there, where we won't have to, you know, deal with crazies and people that want to blow up our buildings. And, you know, imagine what life would be like. You remember what it used to be like to fly in a plane, just flew in a plane, you know, where you didn't have to wait in a line and take off your shoes and take off your belt and wait for hours and get scanned. And why? Because some crazies want to come and harm us. And that's all part of the life that we live. We want a world where we live in peace and, you know, people help each other. They don't try to hurt each other, and people are sensitive, and people value people, and they don't just look at their outside, and they look for spiritual things. So Hashem says, I will comfort you. There will come that time. Mi'at. Now, we live in a world where we're afraid of the Gentiles. We're afraid of the Cossacks, of the armies, and there are certain places there's no freedom of religion. So Hashem is saying that when I, at that time, I will comfort you, you won't have to fear anymore. Who do you have to be afraid of? Mi'at, who's there? V'tira, me'enish yamus. And are you afraid of a person? People are very frail. Those people that are out there, they'll die. They don't live forever. Umi ben Adam, and people are like grass. You know, grass gets mowed down. Like we're afraid of all kinds of people, and there are Jews that live under different dictators and different powers, and those powers they get destroyed. I think they said when Stalin died, that was like the first, you know, even Stalin couldn't defeat death, you know. It was like, but people were afraid of him. They were literally afraid, you know, that they would do something that they, you know, if he gave somebody a look, or he gave, you know, the dictators who had that kind of power. So people were afraid, and Hashem said, yeah, people are they're like grass. They are human. And people are more afraid of these dictators and these powers than they are of Hashem. Verse 13, Betishka Hashem, and they forgot Hashem. Osecha, who is Hashem? He's the one who made you. No Tishamayim, he's the one that created this whole world with the heavens and the earth, the Yosid Oretz. The Tipache Tamid Kolayev Nechama Sametzik. And people are afraid of the oppressors. They're afraid of the what will other people say? What will other people do? Kasher Koren Lahashkis, that these people that are destructive forces. Hanukkah was at a time like that, by the way, where the Jews didn't really have freedom of religion. If a person circumcised their baby, they would hang the mother with the baby around her neck. That was what they did. They couldn't study Torah. That's why they had to. You know, with us, it's so easy to forget what Hanukkah is about. And our Sassina dreidels are this cute little. If you had a class like this in Torah, in the time of Hanukkah, people would be executed for studying Torah. So they had to say, oh, we're playing a game, you know. So that's just so quaint, so cute. You know, you go, you have a little dreidel. But there were Jews who risked their lives just to preserve what they could. They ran away and they lived in caves. The Hashmonaim, the heroes of Hanukkah, they just to exist, and they were afraid that the enemy came to uproot them. So that's what it says over here. Like the people were afraid of oppressors, but there's nothing to be afraid of. Verse 14, Miher Tsoa Lepasek. Whatever needs to happen will happen, so to speak. In other words, he implies that even in the body there are things that open and things that close. Velo Yamos said, humans need Hashem controls everything. People felt like, how can Hashem help us with these mighty armies, these hordes of people that came? It was hard to understand, you know, you're living in Israel and all of a sudden these nations would come to conquer Africa or Asia. Now, hordes and hordes of people would come over Israel and it would seem like never ending. Like, you know, these huge nations, Israel was at the crossroads always. And so Hashem controls the openings and the closing. L'shachav lo yechzer lachmo. And Hashem makes sure that each person will have their bread, even when we are amongst the Gentiles, Hashem keeps us alive. 15, Vanochi Hashem Elokecha. And again, I am Hashem your God. People, they want to forget Hashem. They want to, or they sometimes need to be reminded of Him. Roge Ayam. And he makes the seas go. When you see, like, sometimes when a person looks at the ocean or they look at Niagara Falls or the Grand Canyon, there's a certain spirituality to that. There's a certain sense of a creator. When you see something that's, wow, you know, like there's a certain shudder that a person experiences that there's, you know, Hashem created this world. You know, sometimes it's a certain vastness that a person experiences a person should think into that. It's worth seeing certain parts of nature to feel the grandeur of Hashem. So Hashem says, I'm the one who creates he calls this wrinkles of the sea. I bet there are other words they use. I don't know how that translation uses wrinkles. Rogat, like the, I think it means more like the waves of the sea.
Mm-hmm. That's what mine says.
Yours says waves. Yeah, mine says wrinkles. So it's just a funny word. But who is the one who controls the vastness and the greatness of the world? Hashem's father, it's Hashem. 16. Va'asim davar b'ficha. And Hashem sometimes even tells us what to say. And he also controls the things that the leaders, the monarchs, sometimes there were sometimes kings. Richard Nixon was a good example of that. Like, you listen to the tapes and he hated Jews. He was afraid of Jews. He was a big anti-Semite. But publicly, he did the right things. You know, he saved the Jews during the Yom Kippur War, and Hashem puts the words in the mouth of the leaders. But some people have argued that the so-called friends of Israel, the ones that really loved us, want us to make peace with the Arabs, and they're doing it for our own good. We don't need such good friends, because sometimes a person can think that they're doing something good, and they're really not. It's hard to. But Hashem puts words in people's mouths. And he covers, the shade of his hand, he covers over, he protects us. To the one that founds the heavens. And what is Hashem's message to the world? His message is that the people in Israel, the one that all the United Nations are against, Amiata, they are my people. We are in an exile, and we are downtrodden, and we face many challenges. And in our own lives, we sometimes get into a rut. And there's an idea, and this that we can pick ourselves up. We can awaken power. See, we believe that Hashem can help a person do the things he wants to do. We really find this many times in the Torah. For example, Shimshon, at the end of his life, after he had fallen and sinned, and he was blinded, and his hair was cut, he turned back to Hashem and said, Hashem, you know, he knows that he sinned, he knows that he had his eyes gouged out, he knows that he had done a lot of things he shouldn't have done, but he wanted to awaken those powers once more that he had, and to pull down the pillars. And it says that final miracle was greater than all of the other miracles that he had done. And 20 years after that, the Philistines never attacked us. Imagine going 20 years without it. They were afraid of a Jew after that to mess with us after what had happened. But he used the word like he awakened his powers. Sometimes in the morning when we don't feel like getting up, we can turn to Hashem and say, Hashem, give me the strength to get up and do. But we believe in that. We believe that a person can awaken. Sometimes you really don't have the strength, but if you ask Hashem to help you and you focus and you can get that, it's almost like the weightlifters beforehand. They gird their belt and they work it up and then they find the strength. So there is this concept of awakening or arousing, it's like a person says, I just don't have the strength to do it. Well, give yourself the strength. Go push yourself. That's really what it is. Push yourself. There are people that it's sometimes hard to explain how such people that are weak or people that are not so well, they push themselves. They find the strength. There are other people that really could do things, and they just don't have the force of conviction. There are people who specialize in that, but it's it's motivation. Like you speak to a person, go do it. You can do it. Like how do you get a person to be motivated? How do you? So we believe that there's spiritual motivation. And these words are like wake up. That's the way mine says it, awaken. But it means that a person, if they really want something, they can find the ability to do so. We find this in a few places in the Torah. One of the interesting places was with the daughter of Paro, Batya. Mm-hmm. It says that she saw the baby, she heard the baby crying, and the only problem was he was floating on a raft out to sea. So she didn't necessarily know how to swim or it was too deep. She heard a baby crying and she took pity. Oh, that poor thing. And she reached out. And the word in Hebrew, it says that her hand extended somehow and to reach. There's a few famous cases. There was a case where a little child was playing next to a car that was jacked up. And the mother, the car, the jack broke and it started rolling towards the baby and the mother stopped the car. Even though there's no explanation for how a mother could stop a moving car, she found the strength to somehow, she wasn't going to let that car hurt her baby. A person finds the strength to do things that they need to do. They don't give up. In other words, a person should never say to themselves, I could never do this. Wake yourself up. Pray to Hashem for the strength. If a person, we have expression in Hebrew that when a person wants something, when there's a will, there's a way. That's really from a Hebrew expression. Ein davar omid bnei haratzon. When a person really wants something, and he prays to Hashem to help him, he can find the strength to do it. And there are people whose lives are a testimony to that. So he uses that. We find this in prayer. One place we find it is on Friday night when L'cha Dodi. He's Orui. We say that prayer like, Shabbos is coming. Wake yourself up. Let's get ready. You're sleepy. You worked hard all week. A person can wake themselves up. They can arouse themselves. They can. But that's this expression commonly used. But a person has to believe that they can awaken in themselves the power to do things. That's a very important lesson that if a person really wants something and, oh, I don't know how I'm going to go out on a day like this, or how am I going to, a person has to awaken in themselves the power to do it. And we all have those moments in our lives where we did things that we just don't know how we did it. We just kept on going. We just had the momentum and we asked Hashem and we awakened in ourselves. And so that's what he says over here. Hashem says to Yerushalayim, it's time to wake up. He's so awaken in yourselves. Awaken. Kumi Yerushalayim. Now, why do you have to awaken yourself? Well, we drank the bitter medicine already. We had, how do you say that? We drank the, Sheshasim Yad Hashem Es Kos Chamaso. After we felt Hashem's anger, and we drank the cup of wrath, we drank the cup, Es Kovas Kos HaTarela, and we drank the dregs. And so we, after the punishment, after the bitter exile, we find it difficult to get back up again. Shisitimati. we already drained the cup. We often talk about the cup. There's the cup of that's this week's parsha with Yosef, the cup of Paro, and the cup of the my cup runneth over. A cup is symbolic over here, and so here it talks about we drank the cup of punishment, and now it's time to change. Now we've it's almost like a person committed a crime and he served his time, and so he's drunk. He drank his cup of punishment. Now it's time to begin life anew. Now it's time to we've been through an exile. We faced different challenges. Now it's time to get up. Verse 18. Ein menahalah mikol banim. One of the challenges has been is that we've been confused about which way to do things. We've been challenged with leadership. There's no. This word is used actually in modern Hebrew. Menahal means like the professor is the menahal. A menahal of a yeshiva means like the head of the yeshiva. Ein menahalah. We don't have a head. We don't have anybody to lead us. Mikol banim yolada. We've been looking for a leader. It's a challenge. How do we, there's so many different messages out there. Who do we follow? From all the different sons, from all the different things that have grown up, we don't know who to follow. 19. The Jewish people have faced two great troubles. We've been wanderers, and we faced shod v'shever. We've faced pillage and destruction. Shever is from the word brokenness. Shever is like a break. A person, the word shover means to break. We've been broken. Vaharav and famine. Vacherav. And we face the sword. Mi anachmenu. We almost want to say the Jewish people has faced so much. Ezekiel really, when you talk about dry bones, that really, can't be worse than that when you look at a skeleton to come back to life. But the Jewish people sometimes wonder, can we ever come back? Can we? And the answer is yes, we can. But that's the message of redemption. That we sometimes a person refuses comfort means they think that life will never be the same. Life will never. Things are too bad. They can never be fixed. And part of comfort is life can go on. That life will go on. That a person can. And sometimes when people, they face a tragedy, they want to jump in the grave. They feel like life isn't worth. At that moment, they are in so much pain that they don't want to go on. One of the reasons that a person, when they sit shiva, is they sit on the ground, is they feel like they've got one foot in the grave. Like they don't life. They at the end of shiva, they have to get up. They have to, life has to continue. They have to, be comforted. When we go to a mourner, we use the same word of menachem, comforting the mourner. But it means also refocusing on life, realizing that life will go on, that the mourner needs to be comforted. He needs to see that life will continue, that it will be different. It will be without that person or without in a different way. But he needs to be comforted. He needs to he needs to get over it, so to speak, or realize that Hashem, with Hashem's help, people can get over it. But here, a person is saying that after the Golus, how will we be comforted? And he continues on describing the Jewish people. Menacha Olfu. The Jewish people were like fainted. We're so tired and exhausted. We're like, we've got no strength left. We have no leaders. Shafu Roshko. And we've fallen down at the top of every street corner. We're fallen down. Ketoya Mikmar, we're like an ox stuck in a net. Malach Hamas Hashem, Gar said, we've been facing the rejection of Hashem. The people, when they lived through Holocaust or pogroms, or they really felt it. We live kind of a spoiled existence. Where we have things are. We don't always feel like that. Certainly many times in history. We feel like the Jewish people are downtrodden and broken, and we have to be, how fortunate we are where that we feel that we're not being abused and we're not being taken advantage of by the Gentiles or the 21. Look, hey, Shimon Zosania. So therefore, you know, the Jewish people feel downtrodden. They feel like we're broken. They feel like we don't have leaders. So Hashem says, please hear the poor one, the one who's been afflicted. So here it uses a very interesting expression that we're like someone who's drunk but not from wine. A drunk person is a person that their judgment isn't so great. It's a person of great emotion. It's a person that stumbles, that can't walk the straight line. So it describes the Jewish people after living through the Holocaust and the difficulties were like someone who's drunk, but not really from wine. It's just from the from drinking from the cup of punishment. Kol amar Hashem Adonecha. It's Adonai. Thus says Hashem, who is your master. And he's your master, but he's also your God. Yoriv Amo. Hashem will judge us. He's the one who judges his people. He's the one that will bring judgment and reward us for those that have been loyal. And Hashem says, you know what? You've had enough punishment. I'm going to take back the cup of punishment. You've drunk the dregs enough. You've had enough. Now is the time. One of the things about the birth of the State of Israel was that people felt like Hashem was like a different feeling. Not only did the Holocaust stop, but we got back our land. It was like a feeling like, okay, we had enough punishment. Now it's time for comfort. And so Hashem took away the cup of punishment. And the irony of it was that this was like the worst time in history. We were at the low point. And there were many other times where we had, you know, Jews were powerful, Jews were strong, and we didn't have the land of Israel. We couldn't come back. And all of a sudden, at the worst moment in history, after the greatest destruction, then Hashem allowed us to come back and get our land back. And so it's just such a feeling like, it's almost like he took the cup of punishment away. Okay, enough, you know. And after years and years, the years of the Holocaust were awful. The years before the Holocaust were awful. World War I was awful. If it hadn't been for the Holocaust, you know, Jews were killed during the time of the revolution of the communists. There was they killed Jews in the thousands. After the Tsar was deposed or whatever, after he resigned or whatever it was, there was a war between the Reds and the Whites, and both sides were killing Jews, and because there was lawlessness basically, and whenever there's lawlessness, they took it out of the Jews. They took away their money. They killed them. They just awful, awful, awful. Most of some of my relatives came to this country then at that time they ran away because it was just so awful. But the reason we don't hear more about it is because the Holocaust was even worse. But it's just a funny kind of thing, because if you study what there were city after city of Jewish communities that had been there for hundreds of years throughout Russia, throughout Poland, throughout. They went through terrible times in between the wars. Some of them, like I said, after the Tsar was there was anarchy, and when there's anarchy, they blamed it on the Jews. They took advantage of the Jews. It was a difficult time in our history. Really, the beginning of the last century, we drank from the cup of punishment, and Hashem, it seems like he took it away. Hopefully he took it away for good, right? It just describes it here. Just the imagery is so interesting. It's like somehow we were like forced to drink, you know. We're drinking, you know, we drank the cup of punishment. And Hashem takes away the cup. Lo sasifu l'shtoso, and he promises that, guess what, you won't have to drink anymore. It's almost like, you know, somebody has to take the bitter medicine. And, you know, you promise the child, just one more, you know, one more teaspoon, one more, you know, try to open the mouth and get it in, and then that's it, you won't have to drink anymore. And so that's in a certain way, that's the imagery that it's mentioned over here. 23. V'samti yad mogayech asher amar l'nafshech. And Hashem said, there was someone that throughout our history we had to wander. The Jews were kicked out of one place, and Jews had lived in certain places, and the Gentiles would decree that we'd have to leave. You know, today we think of England as a civilized country. You know, England kicked out all their Jews. The Jews were thrown out of England. One of the reasons they have one of the best libraries, it's called the Bodleian Library. Basically, when they kicked out all the Jews, they kept their books. They didn't burn them. They kicked the Jews. They knew books were valuable. And today, I think one of the third largest collections of Jewish books is in England. I think they came back about 200 years ago. It was Oliver Cromwell said the Jews could come back. But they, in the Middle Ages, they kicked the Jews at one time were very prominent in England, and the Jews of York, I think they were massacred. There was a big massacre under the, it was during the times of Richard the Lionhearted and other things that were going on. But Jews were constantly wandering. Jews had lived in Spain for several hundred years. They had to wander. The Jew was the eternal wanderer. One of the interesting things is that in America, where we feel that we don't have to wander, the Jews that came to this country, the Jewish communities were constantly moving, where the community would settle in like one area, and then the neighborhood would change, and then they'd have to move to another area. And you see this. I lived in places like Cleveland, where the Jews had lived downtown, and then they moved to Cleveland Heights, and then they moved to University Heights, and then they moved to Cincinnati. Has the same thing. There's like three or four neighborhoods where the Jewish community every 30 years moved. Detroit was the same way. Just the Jews would originally settle in one place, and then they New York to some extent, like the Lower East Side. Harlem was a Jewish community, but it was a very Jewish area at one time, and the Jews all had to move out, and they. So even if we don't have a Gentile that stands in front of us and says, "All right, all the Jews have to move," you know, or the, but we wander. And today, you know, the funny thing is, years ago, if a child was born in a city, they wouldn't have left that city. Mm-hmm. They wanted to live near their parents and their grandparents, and they wanted to continue in the same business and the same lands. And today, without even being asked, our children wander. You know, they get on the plane and they go and they live in different cities. And but that's part of the curse of Gullus. It's not a natural thing that we have to spend all our time traveling. You know, everybody come home for the holidays. Well, why'd you leave home? You know, it's just. But we don't even think of it as a curse. It's because there's opportunity there, and there's this. But the natural way of life isn't to have to wander and have to travel. But we spending. It's almost like, you know, we think we're free, but we spend a lot of our time working to pay the government. You know, the taxes and to some extent. People viewed what we did for Paro in Egypt was a tax. We had to pay for the government. We had to build the bricks and had to. So we don't have to go out and build the bricks. We just have to work and give the government 30% of our income or 40% of our. That means that every single day we're working 4, 5, 6 hours to pay the government. We're enslaved to pay for the army and the other things that govern the food stamps and the other things the government does. And so we believe in a lot of the things they do, so we don't feel that we're enslaved, but we believe we get back from the work that we do, which that's a trade-off. But it's just because we look at it differently. But basically, not only in our society, for the first time, not only are all the men working, all the women are working, in addition to raising their kids, and people are working harder than they've ever worked before. But we don't consider it slavery, because we consider ourselves free, but it's just a matter. So the point of it is that we are wandering Jews, even though we don't think of ourselves as one. We see it when somebody came to town and says, "All right, the Jews have 30 days to pick up and leave." It's an interesting concept that we don't have slavery today, but there are certain races that find themselves enslaved, find themselves taking jobs, menial jobs, where they have to follow orders. In other words, we live in a time where there are slaves without somebody standing over you with a whip. You become a slave, or you work for a king, even though there's not an absolute dictator, or you're a wandering Jew, even though nobody's forcing you to wander. But that's the end result is we find that we have to pick ourselves up and go. It's interesting. Teachers and rabbis find that they warn you that, you know, when you enter those fields, that it's very likely that you're going to have to settle in more than one city. And if you'll see that you follow principles, or, you know, they come for a few years and they pick up and they go to a different city, and they become rabbis. It's very rare to have a rabbi that's been able to stay in the same community, same shul. Some of them better themselves. You start off in a smaller town, and after a while they don't have the education. You go to a bigger town. But a lot of times it's because they get a new president of the shul who wants a different kind of rabbi in there. And it's not the rabbi's fault. It's just the shul needed someone else to take the time to run it. And so all of a sudden he has to pick up and has to wander. But that's part of the exile, that people have to wander and have to move and have to... But it's constantly happening around. We're all in the move, whether we like it. We don't consider it a curse, but it is. It is a curse to move and to have to pick up and start over again and meet a new circle of friends and get used to different accommodations in a different place, and we're a stranger and it's difficult. We get lost at first. We have a GPS, so it's not so bad. But it's happening around. I'm just trying to say that we're wandering Jews, and we face many of the curses whether we're aware of it or not. We do. I suppose it's good that we don't consider it a curse. We don't think of it that way. In those days, if a Jew was told, the ruler said, you've got to pick up and go, so all right, that's the way of the Jew. We have to pick up and go. So we said, pick yourself up and go. Go and cross over and pick up and go. We'll just, we'll stop here on 52, where it's going to start with, again, this wake up. Motivate yourself. I like that word better, motivate. Be self-motivating. Focus. Get yourself to, the prophets were motivational speakers. That was their goal.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.